Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Charlotte Hogarth-Jones. And, well, it's been quite a week.
It has. It feels a bit like the world's gone slightly insane this week. It's been quite hard to concentrate on the task in hand sometimes, because obviously British politics, you know, where to begin really?
Where to begin, indeed.
It's hard to know quite what to say, except, you know, as ever, Twitter is my favourite place on the internet, you know, watching the memes roll in of Carrie steaming off the wallpaper in Downing Street before being kicked out and things like that was quite fun. And obviously, Boris Johnson's resigned.
He didn't want to go, though, did he?
Nope. Have you seen there's something doing the round? He wrote a letter, a column for The Spectator when Gordon Brown was in power saying, you know, who's going to tell him he's got to get out? And then you just
I did see that.
Kind of same applies to you. But anyway, it's been entertaining watching it unfold. I had a look. I was trying to think, well, has Boris ever been on a super yacht? There's very little in his super yachting history, I have to say, apart from that kind of big royal yacht that he was backing, and that was controversial because there was a very high price tag attached to it. And there was the only other thing that came up is he once sat in a rowing boat with the Swedish Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson, and she looked incredibly uncomfortable. I'm not sure I'd be in a rowing boat with Boris. That's all I've got from his boating history.
Yeah, I don't have much on his yachting history really. I mean, I'm sure he's been on a few big boats in his time. My abiding memory of Boris though is hanging. Jim was hanging on that zip wire, waving the two Union flags, and he got stuck halfway down the zip wire.
I haven't seen that. We'll have to dig it out on YouTube.
But I can make lots of bad jokes about sinking ships, etc. But we haven't quite lost the Prime Minister. He's sticking around, it seems, for a few more months until they can figure out who's going to replace him. But anyway. It's all happening.
It's all kicking off.
In British politics at the moment. It's fascinating to watch. And you're right, Twitter's a funny place to be sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, good times. But did manage to do some work last week, not just sitting on Twitter, because I've been putting together our October design report. So for those of you who are interested in interiors, whether you're an owner or you're kind of in the design world, this is our sort of annual collection of all the best things to add onto your yacht from the next season, things that were kind of displayed at Salone di Mobile in Milan or elsewhere. So I've been catching up with lots of great designers. I saw a British designer, Luke Edward Hall, last week. So he's done work with the likes of Burberry and Anthropology and Liberty of London. And he's designed this fabric collection for Rubelli, which is inspired by Greek and Roman myths and also English country gardens. And it's very cool. And it's more fitting for a yacht than you might think.
Great name for a designer, Luke Edward Hall.
Yeah.
You can't fail.
He is the kind of quintessential British designer, like grew up in Basingstoke, now lives in the Cotswolds in a very tasteful cottage. But he kind of sketches these little sort of semi-Greek figures and things. And obviously Rubelli, like huge Venetian family that have been weaving for centuries. So that's a really great kind of collaboration. And it's quite different to his normal style. It's quite usable. And then I also went to see the designer Tom Dixon speak this week. I mean, he's a fascinating guy. Like most people have heard of him. He's a kind of household name outside of superyachting. But he was, in a way, he was the sort of original upcycler. I hadn't really realised, but he began his career by going around scrapyards and just collecting bits and pieces and making these kind of insane, rusty-looking death trap chairs that obviously you couldn't sit on, but looked very cool. So that's how he made his name. But he was looking at all sorts of interesting sustainable materials and things, which I hope we'll be able to explore in some detail later, including growing furniture underwater, which I thought was pretty cool. If you're a yacht owner and you're interested in your furniture.
What a wild concept.
Yeah, it's kind of wacky. Basically, they put a series of rods, so like the structure of the chair or whatever, put it in the bottom of the ocean. I think it was in, I can't remember where it was. I think it was the Bahamas, but I think I've got that wrong. Somewhere rather lovely. It seemed like a good excuse for a trip. And then they leave them underwater with a mild kind of electric current attached to it. And over time, obviously, this forms almost like a kind of coral reef in the shape of the chair. They call it sea cement. And so it forms this amazing habitat for all the reef life while it's being built. And then they fished them out of the sea, and he's just finished his first 12 under the sea chairs.
That's awesome, actually. I love the idea of that.
They're definitely the kind of things you would have as an artwork.
I can't imagine they'd be very comfortable to sit on. Yeah, you might get a barnacle in the bum. That might be a bit painful. Yeah,
but it's cool that designers are starting to think about these things. And actually, one of the things they had there, which I thought would be amazing for super yachts, is they had some women there from a company based in Hackney in the UK who does kind of a plastic alternative packaging made out of seaweed. But they've started doing it for things like shampoo and shower gel and all the things that you would have in your guest bathrooms. And they actually look really premium. And then when you run them under the water, they just dissolve. So there's no plastic, which is kind of great.
It's kind of great. Was this a masterpiece?
No, this wasn't. This was just a press event that was held because it's 20 years of Tom Dixon. But they're also doing that packaging for things like all the kind of little things that come in plastic, like ketchup and olive oil and soy sauce and all those kind of little things where it's just endless stupid bits of plastic. It dissolves straight away, which is pretty clever. But what have you been up to this week?
Well, it's been a bit of a whirlwind, really. So, well, the last couple of weeks, it's every week now. On a plane, much to my kids' annoyance. So I stopped some time ago buying presents for when I trips, because there was so much travel, it would have just bankrupted me. But you still get the, you walk in the front door and the first thing the kids say to you is, "What did you bring us?" And when I say nothing, the look of disappointment and on their faces.
You don't get the odd giant Toblerone every now and then?
Very occasionally. I've actually been in Germany and they sent me home. So Albert King and Rasmussen sent me home with this very cool Lego set of a swath boat. So the kids were very excited about that. So corporate gifts.
Yeah, it's not all bad, kids.
So this week I've been in Germany and last week I was in Italy. So Germany was just a bit of a road trip to see some of our some of the big shipyards up there. So I saw Lürssen, Abeking, Rasmussen, and Nobbeskrug, which is great, actually. So we're actually at the Nobbeskrug shipyard when they announced their new 80-meter contract, which is very exciting. So with Stefan, the marketing director up there, and he was saying, just check your phones, because at 10:30 the press release is going to come through. And it duly did. So congratulations to Nobbeskrug. It's great to see them selling that boat.
Yeah, I saw that come through. It looks really cool, the initial sketches. I know that they're up on our site, and it is one of those things that, you know, it does catch the eye. It's a good looking boat.
Yeah, the sketches are very, very promising indeed. Winch Design, sold by Cecil Wright. It's a really good trio of organizations there, and it's good. So there was a big refit in the yard. I'm not entirely sure if I'm allowed to say what boat it is, but you know, it's all over the place. In the shed, in the dry dock, they had two new boats under construction. This is another one. And I think they've got a bit more good news coming up fairly soon. So after Nobbeskrug's issues last year, they were obviously bought by Lars Windhorst, became part of the Tenner Group, and they're selling boats. And it's such a pedigreed yard with great history. And actually, in the September issue, which we're working on now, out in August, that has got one of the most famous Nobbeskrugs ever in it, Tatoosh. So we tell the story of Tatoosh and feature some great photography of her. It's just, you know, a bit of momentum for Nobbeskrug, which is great.
Yeah, it's good to see them kind of back on track. Sounds like they're doing
well. Yeah, absolutely. And it's always a joy to see Abeking. And we missed, and we're at the Lürssen Yards a week after Blue had left. So we actually timed it terribly badly, you know, because we turned up and Blue, we'd missed her by a few days. She was out a bit, had been delivered, and we'll talk a bit more about the massive Project Blue shortly. And before that, last week I was in Italy seeing Paolo Vitelli, the legend, and learning a bit more about the Beyond 37 meter, the launch of which Sophia was at this week. So you might have seen some videos and things like that on our social channels.
The launch looked extra. I loved it. There was confetti cannons and opera singers and a priest blessing the boat and some insanely beautiful kind of long table along the waterfront. Like, Bonetti do these events so well, don't they? And it did look like a real kind of send-off.
Yeah, they do it. They do it right. In fact, the Italian shipyards all do it right. They really know how to send a boat off into her owner's arms or a standard launch. You know, it's always a great celebration.
And you've seen the boat, haven't you?
Yeah, so I had a look around it with Paolo, because obviously that is a big feature in our September issue, which I have to write, which I'm sweating about, because next week I'm traveling again. So I've got to figure out how to write a cover feature in the meantime. So our production team give me beady eyes the whole time at the moment, because I'm just pushing deadlines back and back and back. But it'll get done. It'll get done. But it's a brilliant boat. It's a really interesting, novel boat. And it was all inspired. So it's really the brainchild of Paolo Vitelli and Stefano Righini. Obviously, we lost Stefano last year, which is a great tragedy for the yachting industry, because he was just a legendary designer with thousands, tens of thousands of designs under his belt and boats under his belt. And this was his last kind of big full project. And so it was quite emotional for that reason as well. And in the master saloon of main saloon of Golga, the first 37 meter beyond, is a beautiful portrait of Stefano Righini, because obviously he and Paolo were great friends and had known each other for an awfully long time. But the whole concept was built around. So Paolo wanted as much volume as he possibly could get into the smallest hull he could possibly get, because he wanted to be able to pack lots of friends and family on the boat, because it's his boat, or it was his boat, the first one. And he wanted to be able to get into little harbours in Italy and Greece and Turkey, which you obviously can't do in a big boat. So it's all about getting that maximum volume in a modest LOA that still allows you to access those tiny little village harbours that you just can't get to in a bigger boat.
I definitely feel like this is a trend we're seeing more and more. Like, I remember when I started at Boat, I think it was 4 years ago, that it seemed like the boats were just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And all the emphasis was on how big can you make it? How many meters can you add if you're extending it? You know, all about the length. And recently, I think people are kind of rowing backwards from that, especially as people are getting a bit more adventurous and they're using their boats more, because they want to be able to get into those smaller anchorages and they want to have the freedom of, you know, not being tied to this, you know, huge thing. I met at our Superyacht Design Festival a couple of weeks ago, I met a couple of owners actually who said that their next boat was actually smaller than their former one. I met someone who I think had had an 85 meter and was going down to a 50, and somebody else who was doing something similar. And what they want, exactly like this, I'm sure it'll be really successful, is the same amount of volume. They still want all that space. They just want to crunch it down into a sort of more manageable size. So it's interesting seeing the trends kind of reversing.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And naval architects are so clever now. And stabilization is such that you can talk boats are getting taller and fatter all the time. And which means you don't need a massive platform for the volume that you require. And that tells you why the catamaran, the multi-hull market, is doing so well. I mean,
I wondered if you were going to find a way to mention catamarans. I thought I'd bring it up and I was like, no, you'll go there.
It's true. You know?
Who is paying you to mention catamarans all the time? You're getting some kind of kickback every time. It's just catamaran lobbying group.
But it is the logical conclusion of this trend. It's the only way you can get that many gross tons into the smallest platform possible. You have to go. There's a limit to the width of a monohull, right? So there is a finite kind of platform. You can go fatter and fatter and fatter and wider and wider and wider, but it will ultimately reach its limit, and then you have no choice but to go multi-hull. So,
well, we have a feature coming up about that, which I think is going to be incredible, in our October issue, all about these kind of massive volume, massive power, this new generation of catamarans that are a world away from, you know, the ones that were coming out sort of 10, 15 years ago. And they're very cool. And when you look at the interiors pictures, it does make you think, wow, you do get so much more space, and actually how different a boat can look when you have that kind of volume and that openness to play with. It's a bit of a game changer.
It absolutely really is. Openness and space and big views and horizons, massive windows, it all lends itself to that market. But back to the Beyond, what's interesting about, another interesting point about the Beyond is it's steel. So it's a steel, semi-custom, 37 meter boat, and that's very unusual, almost unheard of actually, to have a steel boat of that size that's semi-custom. And that just allows you, obviously, to pack in the kind of volume you need. And it's a really interesting layout. So you kind of walk on the boat and it's like split the aft deck splits, and so you can go down to a kind of a tender deck, and they can have 7 meter tenders on a 37 meter boat. I mean, it's crazy.
It's incredible.
Crazy. And then you walk up to then the saloon area, and just vast amounts of space. So the way the first hull is set up, this is kind of lower, kind of, they call it the play room, basically. So it's a lower saloon. It feels like an apartment. You could put a whole family unit in there. Then up is the main saloon, and then the forward dining area, which is lovely with beautiful views. Then up again is the wheelhouse, and up again is a sun deck. I mean, and it's the first hull has an aft-facing master on the upper deck with big, expansive views and its own private deck. And I mean, I'm not doing it justice. That description was awful, but
no, it sounds amazing. It sounds like an incredible use of space. And yeah. I think so far I mentioned it's super quiet as well, right? Because of this hybrid propulsion.
Yeah, so it's got a really novel power mix. Which is fascinating, which I tried to wrap my head around in conversation with Paolo and the various guys at Bonetti, but I need to get a kind of a schematic, kind of a power diagram before I commit pen to paper. I really don't want to screw it up. But the it's really interesting, really novel power solution on the boat. And just so much space. It's crazy. And I think Hull 3, so check this out, Hull 3, if I've got this right, has seven cabins. In a 37 meter boat. Wild, absolutely wild.
Yeah, and I think it's a kind of perfect family boat, because that's just the right amount of space for if you want a few crew, you know, kids, mum and dad, a couple of friends. Yeah, perfect. But yeah, so that sounds really interesting. And when's that out?
September issue. Well, that's if I can
if you can knuckle down on one of your many flights next week. Where are you off to next week, by the way?
Overnighted to Monaco. Need to go see a few people out in the Principality. So that's just Tuesday and Wednesday.
Have to say, when I was in Monaco the other day, I'd forgotten how nice it is when the show's not on, when you can actually just walk around and there's not kind of huge throngs of people. It's a very different place then.
It is.
But while we're talking about September, I should give a shameless plug, you know, shoehorned in effortlessly, for our Life Under Sail supplement, which Sophia's been working on. So that'll be coming out. And if you're into your sailing, or if you're looking at buying a sailing boat, some really great stuff in there, including a very cool feature on the 2-year circumnavigation of Aquillo.
Aquillo.
I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. Aquillo. And an interview with the owner of Nostroma, Sir Andrew Cook. And an article looking at why St. Bart's has become the sailing super yacht destination of the year. So lots to unpack there.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, Aquillo, legendary boat. So this kind of concept, the idea for this feature was born in St. Bart's earlier in the year, actually, because I was sitting in a bar talking to Bill Tripp, who designed the boat. And he was just talking about some of the amazing adventures the boat's been on. And it's done everything. Done Cape Horn a few times, I think. And I mean, imagine those photos, seeing a Kia going around Cape Horn. I mean, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
And he said, and I said, well, you know, let's do something about it, because, you know, it's crazy not to tell this fantastic story. So thanks to Bill, he kind of helped set all that up. And I think Sophia wrote it. I think she did. So it'll be a brilliant feature. And learn more, because you know, obviously the boat was launched, we did the feature in the magazine, and then it just disappeared, right? It just went sailing. So now we get the opportunity to tell the story since launch and some of the amazing things that she's done.
I love these owners' adventure story. And in our adventure special, we've got all the stories of this yacht Arctic P and where they've been and what they've done. And I think sometimes owners do such incredible things and they're sort of blinded by how amazing they are. And they sort of mention, oh yeah, I did this and I did this, and think, that's incredible. Like, we should tell people about that.
Yeah, so many stories. And that's the reason why we're kind of doing these kind of slight retrospectives on these iconic yachts as well. That's why we did Octopus when the new photos came out. Why we're doing Tatoosh in the September issue, you know. It's just famous boats, so why don't we tell their amazing stories?
So yeah, that's the September issue. It's a big issue. But yeah, don't forget, obviously, I think it's in a week, our August issue hits the stands, or hits your doormat. And that's got some great stuff in there as well, including a big property special, which is really interesting. There's a big feature on the state of the market and another one looking at the rise of branded residences, which we've seen popping up all over the place. And our top pick of the finest properties for sale in the world, which I love. I love a snoop and a bit of property porn, and there's plenty of it in there.
Yeah, there's no shortage. So if you're in the market for a mega home, don't miss the August issue. So that'll be, yeah, like Charlotte says, that'll be with you next week. It's got Arpo on the cover, the 115-meter Lursen, which is just such a special boat. I mean, yeah, if you haven't seen the photos, the team have done an amazing job of laying it out in the magazine. It's just spectacular. Anyway, let's we could talk about another Lursen. How's this for a segue? So let's kick on with some news. Another big Lursen is top of the list this week. Charlotte, take it away.
Sure. Okay. So formerly known as Project Blue, the 160-meter super yacht, just Blue now, has been delivered. She left the Lursen facilities on Saturday and is currently on her maiden voyage to Malta. She was first launched in February of this year, and the yacht is now the fifth largest yacht in the world in terms of LOA. Terence Disdale, we love Terence, has designed both the interior and exterior of the 15,320 GT superyacht, making full use of the yacht's 22.5-metre beam and generous decks. The yacht is one of the largest in the world to be equipped with hybrid propulsion, and she features PTI and PTO units that can be used for either electric propulsion for slow speeds or for generating electrical energy to operate the vessel at higher speeds. Blue also features an innovative after-treatment system and a wastewater treatment plan, which is equipped with new membrane technology, which essentially allows treated wastewater to be safely disposed of in drinking water quality, according to the yard. The yacht also has a pair of helicopter landing sites, a large helideck at the bow and a smaller helipad aft, and each of the four upper decks features a large alfresco entertaining area with a swimming platform connected to a beach club plus forward stateroom balconies on either side. Very cool and huge.
Huge. Fourth largest, is that right, in terms of LOA? Fifth largest in terms of LOA.
Fifth largest, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely monster, this boat. So congratulations to Lursen and to Terry. Huge project. Yeah.
Big delivery. Hope we can see it soon.
Yeah, yeah, I keep an eye on AIS. And I think she'd already, as of yesterday, I think she'd already made it around to Gibraltar. So I think she's heading into the Med to catch some sun.
There'll be some yacht spotters standing there ready to capture this. You can feel them getting out the camera phones.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, congratulations all involved. We have another delivery next, and that is the delivery of 75-metre Kensho by the Italian Sea Group in Carrara. Built in steel and aluminium to a design by Azure Yacht Design and Naval Architecture, Kensho is the new flagship of the Italian Sea Group fleet, superseding its former flagship, Planet 9, by 1.8 metres. Actually, I was in Carrara a couple of weeks ago, saw Kensho, had a look through, and really impressed with her layout, which is definitely novel. Some new thinking has been used there. And so we are going to do our utmost to bring you that story very, very soon in the magazine. But she is for charter, excitingly, with Wyco asking €850,000 per week. She can pack in 16 guests in 8 cabins in her 13-metre beam. Has a very impressive master suite and a cool observation lounge. And It's really interesting when you walk through a boat. It's happening more and more now when you walk through boats. You think this is new because it's sometimes a bit easy to get blasé about fairly standard layouts. But when you walk through a boat like Kensho, it's a real eye opener. And again, they've used a design that's not familiar with the superyacht world on the interior, which has resulted in some quite interesting solutions. But yeah, great looking boat. The owner said, Kensho combines the best concepts of residential design with those of yacht design to create a brand new lifestyle at sea. And I think that really sums it up. So she will be around the Med this summer. So if you get an opportunity, go take a look.
Sounds very cool. Well, you can also have a look on our site, of course, at the pictures that have come out so far.
Next up, we have the news that the Azimut Benetti Group has reported a production value of €1 billion for 2021 and 2022, representing a 19% increase from the previous year. When I was there last week in Livorno, just seeing the packed sheds at Benetti. This doesn't surprise me at all, this news. And I was walking around with Dario, the from the marketing team. He's going, that's B now Hull 7, that's B be now Halle. It's just, it's wild. And they've sold, I think, 9 Beyonds. They're in their 20s for the Oasis 40 meters. They've sold
that's amazing.
Bundle of the 50 meter B-Nows. Just absolute winning streak at the moment, that company.
19% is such a huge increase as well. That's really significant.
Big increase.
In such a difficult, you know, difficult, uncertain time as well.
Yeah. So the 1 billion euro figure production value has been buoyed by extraordinary sales from the past year, which has also resulted in a record-breaking order book valued at over 2.5 billion euros. The group reports the majority of its clients come from the Americas, while 32% come from Europe, 16% from the Asia-Pacific region, and 14% from the Middle East. It also notes that it is attracting a younger demographic of yacht buyer, with an average age of around 55 for Benetti and 45 for Azimut. We're hearing that from everyone at the moment, aren't we? Mm. And I was at San Lorenzo on a trip to Italy before that one, and they said the average age of their customer had come down to 48. So, yeah, yacht buyers are getting younger. And I asked Chris Cecil Wright this, actually, in an interview which we'll be publishing shortly on the podcast. And he said it's, you know, I was trying to figure out exactly why. And he said it's really just because there's just more and more richer, younger people. It's really just a consequence of that.
We actually discussed this a bit at that Monaco conference I was at a couple of weeks ago. Actually, the presentation was all about how superyacht owners are becoming younger and what that means and the demographics. And the professors from the University of Monaco were saying a lot of it is money coming either from tech or from pharmaceutical companies. But what they were saying it means is that these younger owners tend to view yachts as a more transactional purchase. So they're less interested in kind of what it says about them or the statement it makes, and more interested in the fact that it means, okay, I can go on a family holiday whenever I want, or I can travel when flights are all over the shop. And as a result, that means they want them much quicker. So it's hardly a surprise that people like Benetti, you know, are rushing to keep up with these orders, because they're not bothered about spending 3 years choosing every door handle and kind of putting together this loving baby. They just want something quick. And if there's a kind of series like one of these that they know people have got, they've seen them, they know they're going to do the job, they just kind of want them off the shelf as quick as possible, really.
Yeah, makes total sense to me. And the semi-custom designs in this size range is so cool nowadays. It's so novel that it's no surprise they're finding a ready market. So looking to the future, Azimut Benetti plans to invest 130 million euros into the business over the coming 4 years, with a core focus on sustainability. Certainly reflected in the Beyond power mix. As well as developing new energy sources for its products, the company intends to develop its production sites, digitize its industrial processes, and improve conditions for its workers. So lots of good news coming out of Livorno and the Azimut Benetti Group.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see what else they produce over the next year or so. I'm sure greater and greater things. But now we're on to my favourite news story, which I've been desperate to read out because this has been entertaining me somewhat for the past week. So I'll give you the news story in a second, but first I wanted to preface it with some of the comments on the Facebook page. There's this yacht called Asian Lady, and the comments about it, if you look on our Facebook page in the story, always make me laugh. One said, "The ugliest thing by far I have ever seen floating." But it's controversial because someone had commented directly underneath, "I don't agree, it's beautiful." And then someone French had commented, "Quelle horreur," which made me laugh. And my favourite said, "A bow only a mother could love." Anyway, it's controversial. If you look at the comments, some people love it, some people hate it. Gotta say, probably not one for me. But anyway, if you're looking, it's just had a big price reduction. This is the news that the 88.15-metre Pride Mega Yachts multi-hull Asian Lady is listed for sale by Raffles Yacht Group, and she's had a price drop of 3 million euros. Built in steel by Chinese yard Pride Megayachts to a design by Ian Mitchell, she was delivered in 2004. She provides accommodation for 18 guests in 8 spacious staterooms, of which the master cabin is an incredible 160 square metres with a private balcony and office. Her design is based on a proa, a bamboo outrigger canoe, which is known for its stability and long-range capabilities, which has been used for centuries by the indigenous people of the South Pacific. It is a really unusual design. You just have to look at it. It's definitely one of the weirdest boats I've ever seen. And yeah, it's divided the team here at Boat. Katia, our features writer, really likes it. You know, people either love it or they hate it. It's kind of Marmite boat. But whatever you think about her design, it does mean that Ace and Lady can literally walk sideways with both the forward and aft drives making berthing a breeze. Apparently, her stability was put to the test in December 2004 when she survived the tsunami while anchored off Phuket. So, so it does work from that point of view. And she's for sale, so go and check her out.
I think, she's a multi-hull. Right, so
yeah, she's going to put your love to the test. Would you buy Ace and Lady?
Well, let's look at the numbers, right? She's asking 20, she's now with that $3 million, she's in dollars, price drop. She's asking $27 million. She's 88.15 meters long. She carries, bear with me while I desperately check the numbers on our website, she's a gross tonnage of 2,385, 21 meter beam. So I think that works out as about $11,320 a gross ton, which is amazing value, actually, for a boat.
Great value.
Yeah.
I mean, do you like how she looks?
No, obviously she... But you know, so many people say it's, you know, it's what's on the inside that counts, Charlotte.
It's eye-catching.
I think a boat offering this kind of... volume asking that kind of money is very, very rare indeed, and it will find the buyer, of course it will. And
so actually inside she's very cool, she's, you know, that is really spacious,
vast, absolutely vast. So go check her out. There's a few photos of her insides on our website. Ignore the one of her outside, and big sweeping staircases, the master cabin, just endless. I've never been on board her, actually. I'd love to go and have a look. Because
it's nice to see something different for a change anyway. A kind of new design, an unusual design, is always refreshing to see, isn't it?
Yeah, I completely agree.
Well, that's enough about very big boats. Time to talk about something smaller, and to move on to the data, which is, as ever, brought to you by our exclusive market intelligence platform, Boat Pro. So this week, we're going to focus on Italian yard Riva, who I'm sure you'll all have heard of. And there are a number of reasons for this. Firstly, they've recently celebrated their 180 years during a very special event in Venice, the one that you went to actually with Beckham and Favino, special guests. Mm-hmm. But 2022 is also a special year for another reason, as Riva is celebrating 60 years of its legendary boat, the Riva Aquarama. It was sort of celebrated in style this Sunday in Monaco during the 14th Riva Trophy, organised by Riva MBS. And for this event, a beautiful anniversary book was unveiled in the presence of Leah Riva, the daughter of Carlo Riva. She's also the CEO of Riva Monaco Boat Service, and we're hoping to get her on the podcast pretty soon to tell us about it more in detail. Of course, Boat International was there for the event, so you can find all the videos and photos of that on our social media, on over on Instagram and on Facebook.
It looked amazing. I really wanted to go, actually, but Raphael got the privilege. So Raphael is our data guru. And occasionally we let him out the basement to go to the water. And he loved it. He didn't take much demurring on this one. So I said, Raph, do you want to go race around on Reavers for a few days? And he bit my arm off. He was very happy.
He loves a fast racing boat, does Rafa? He kind of keeps quiet about it, but any excuse to go and kind of whiz around, he does.
Absolutely.
Jump out.
Well, I mean, what's not to like? Exactly. I mean, you're cruising around the south of France in beautiful mahogany Rivas and fleets of them. I mean, beautiful, stunning. It looked amazing. I'll try and go next year.
Yeah, I love a Riva. I would have one if I could. I think they're so gorgeous and so kind of, classically kind of elegant. But if we focus on the Aquarama for a second and look at some stats about that. So designed by Carlo Riva, obviously, and the first model was launched in 1962. And between 1962 and 1996, 769 Aquaramas were delivered. And the Aquarama was split into three main series. So there was obviously the original Aquarama built between 1962 and 1972. There was 289 boats built, including seven hulls in a special Lungo version. Then came the, just the next year afterwards, so they kind of overlapped, was the Super Aquarama built between 1963 and 1971. There were 203 of these built, and this version has more powerful engines compared to the standard version, so a kind of souped up Super Aquarama. And then came the Aquarama Special, which was built between 1972 and 1996. So that did come later. There were 277 of them, and they were slightly longer than the standard version. And the Special also has a redesigned stern for easier access to the water. The standard Aquarama has twin V8 175 horsepower GM engines. And there was actually a one-off built. This is pretty cool. In 1968, there was the Riva Aquarama Lamborghini, hull number 278, was built for Ferruccio Lamborghini, founder of Lamborghini. So that was a very special one-off. And this model has twin V12 350 horsepower Lamborghini engines, as you'd expect, giving a top speed of 48 knots.
In my former life at motorboat and yachting, we tested this Lamborghini, Special Lamborghini Riva, and what a boat! Just absolute stunner. One of the rarest Rivas, and an absolute icon of the range. Lovely, lovely stuff.
I mean, what a collaboration, Lamborghini and Riva. That's kind of match made in heaven, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Was it as fast and as fun as it sounds?
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But anyway, sadly, lots of Aquaramas have disappeared following accidents and also fires in sheds and things like that. According to our sources, between 30 and 40% of them were destroyed, making these boats even more precious today.
They are beautiful and real diamonds. And if you've got one, take care of it, because they are a bit like Patek Philippe, you know, their famous advert, you know, you don't ever own it. You're just looking after it for the next generation. I slightly feel like that's true of the Riva Aquarama. I mean, it's one of the few boats that have really cut through to the mainstream. I think if you ask the average person in the street to name a boat, many of them would be able to say Riva, and some of the iconic images from the 60s, that real Dolce Vita era.
Mm.
Bridget Bardot reclining on the back of her Riva Florida and things like that. I mean, those images will just last forever. I mean, what a brand. What a brand.
When you search Riva Aquarama, I was looking at pictures to see if I could see the first ones from that first release. And there's so much merchandise associated with it. You can buy tea towels and model boats and prints and posters. And, you know, it's got such a kind of, it's such an icon in that sense of a word that everyone around the world kind of recognizes that. They might not know the name, but they know it. What a kind of triumph of design to have that as your legacy.
Yeah, Carlo. What an icon. And yeah, it'd be great to talk to his daughter, Leah. I'll try and set that up in the next couple of weeks, because it'd be brilliant to hear directly from her. And that brings us to the end of this week's boat briefing. Thank you for tuning in, Charlotte. Pleasure to be with you.
You too. Good to be back in the UK.
Yeah, going again soon. As ever, this episode was mixed and produced by the wonderful Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and tune in on Monday, where hopefully we'll have an interview for you. And otherwise, have a great weekend. See you soon.